Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, chapter entitled Prithu Maharaja's Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 16. Vyaktam Atma Vatam Atma Bhagavan Atma Bhavana Svanam Manu Grahayemam Siddurupi Charatyaja Vyaktam Atma Vatam Atma Bhagavan Atma Bhavana Svanam Anugrahayemam Siddharupi Charatyaja Vyaktam Atma Vatam Atma Bhagavan Atma Bhavana Svanam Anugrahayemam Siddharupi Charatyaja. Vyaktam clear. Atmavatam of the transcendentalists. Atma, the goal of life. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atma Bhavana, always wishing to elevate the living entities. Svanam, whose own devotees. Anugrahaya, just to show mercy. Imam, this way. Siddharupi, perfectly self-realized. Charati, travels. Aja, Narayan. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always anxious to elevate the living entities, who are His parts and parcels, and for their special benefit, the Lord travels all over the world in the form of self-realized persons like you. Translation responsively. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always anxious to elevate the living entities, who are His parts and parcels, and for their special benefit, the Lord travels all over the world in the form of self-realized persons like you. Purport. There are different kinds of transcendentalists, namely the jnanis or impersonalists, the mystic yogis, and of course all the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Kumaras, however, were both yogis and jnanis and finally bhaktas later on. In the beginning they were yogis and jnanis, in the beginning they were impersonalists, but later they developed devotional activities. Therefore, they are the best of the transcendentalists. The devotees are representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to elevate the conditioned souls to their original consciousness, they travel all over the universe to enlighten the conditioned souls about Krishna consciousness. The best devotees are Atmavat, or those who have fully realized the Supreme Soul. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Paramatma, is sitting within everyone's heart, trying to elevate everyone to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he is called Atma Bhavana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always trying to give the individual soul the intelligence to understand about himself. He is always with the individual as a friend sitting by the side of a friend, and he gives facilities to all living entities according to their desires. The word Atma Vatam is significant in this verse. There are three different kinds of devotees, namely Kanishta Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The neophyte, the preacher, and the Mahabhagavat, or the highly advanced devotee. The highly advanced devotee is one who knows the conclusion of the Vedas in full knowledge. Thus he becomes a devotee. Indeed, not only is he convinced himself, but he can convince others on the strength of Vedic evidence. The advanced devotee can also see all other living entities as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord without discrimination. The Majjhima Adhikari, preacher, is also well versed in the Shastras and can convince others also. But he discriminates between the favorable and the unfavorable. In other words, the Majjhima Adhikari does not care for the demoniac living entities, and the neophyte Kanishta Adhikari does not know how much about Shastra, but has full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Kumaras, however, were Mahabhagavats because after scrutinizingly studying the absolute truth, they became devotees. In other words, they were in full knowledge of the Vedic conclusion. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed by the Lord that there are many devotees, but a devotee who is fully conversant in the Vedic conclusion is very dear to him. Everyone is trying to elevate himself to the highest position according to his mentality. The karmis, who have a bodily concept of life, try to enjoy sense gratification to the utmost. The jnani's idea of the highest position is merging into the effulgence of the Lord. But a devotee's highest position is in preaching all over the world the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the devotees are actually the representatives of the Supreme Lord. And as such, they travel all over the world directly as Narayana, because they carry Narayana within their hearts and preach his glories. The representative of Narayana is as good as Narayana, but he is not to conclude, like the Mayavadis, that he has become Narayana. Generally, a sannyasi is addressed as Narayana by the Mayavadis. Their idea is that simply by taking sannyas, one becomes equal to Narayana, or becomes Narayana himself. The Vaishnava conclusion is different. As stated by Srila Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Shakshat Haritvena Samasta Shastriya Uktastata Bhavyata Eva Sadbi Kintu Prabhoya Priya Eva Tasya Vandegaro Sri Charanara Vindam. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, a devotee is as good as Narayan, not by becoming Narayan, but by becoming the most confidential servant of Narayan. Such great devotees act as spiritual masters for the benefit of the people in general, and as such, a spiritual master who is preaching the glories of Narayana should be accepted as Narayana and be given all respects due him. Omagyan Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bancha Kaupa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubi Evacha Petitunam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So the verse is talking about guru. Different types of gurus are mentioned within our philosophy. What are the different types of gurus which are described? There is the super soul, the Paramatma. He is the guru within the heart. He is God himself. He is directing all of us from within the heart. You know, sometimes you do something that you should not be doing and your heart begins to beat very quickly. Has anyone ever had that experience? Everyone. Okay, good. Not very good. You should not do that. But we all do it. Sometimes you do something and your heart's like, that's super soul. Because super soul is not happy. So therefore, and the jiva, he knows that Krishna is not happy, so then begins to become disturbed. Your whole life has become disturbed sometimes. Sometimes your body begins to shake. Because you know you should not be doing something, but you're doing it. Krishna is there. He's in the heart. He's watching everything. He is the permitter. He is the overseer. He watches everything that we do. So we have to be conscious. You can't think, you know, I can just go off and hide somewhere and do something. I come to the temple and I act like a devotee. But then when I'm away, I can go and do something. No one will know. But Krishna, he can see everything. He is there. He is the Adiguru. And he's giving you instructions constantly within your heart. Right? Constantly, he's giving you instructions. And the more advanced you become, the more you can take instruction from Super Soul, guidance from Super Soul. You can't only take guidance from Super Soul, not at our level. Because you'll get mixed up between Super Soul and your mind. You'll say, oh, the Super Soul is telling me. Super Soul told me I have to go and do this. No, it was your mind was telling you. So you don't know. You're not advanced enough. But the more pure you become, the more you can take instruction from Krishna in the heart. You know what to do. And Krishna will guide you. And he will illuminate. Tesham satata yuktanam. Bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami. Buddhi yogam tam. Dadami. Buddhi yogam. Buddhi yoga. You know that term, buddhi yoga? Where is that mentioned in Bhagavad Gita? The what? That verse is not second chapter. That verse is chapter 10. But in chapter 2, Krishna says buddhi yoga. How many times does he use that term, buddhi yoga, in chapter 2? How many times? I can't remember actually. But, but it's something like 16, 17 times or something. Yeah, if you go through chapter 2, especially from verse 40 onwards to 70, 72, like, Krishna uses that term a lot, buddhi yoga, something like 15, 16 times. Burajampa recounted it. I can't remember exactly how many, but it's significant. Buddhi yoga, buddhi yoga, buddhi yoga. Are you practicing buddhi yoga? It's in the Bhagavad Gita. We should be practicing buddhi yoga. What is buddhi yoga? Yoga of intelligence. Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give you buddhi yoga. What does that mean? Purified intelligence. When you have purified intelligence, you know what to do. Krishna purifies your intelligence. Then you know what to do. You know, you don't have to ask your guru every time, you know, oh, Guru Maharaj, you know, should I turn left or right when I get to the traffic lights? No, you know. Because you know what the super soul wants. You know what Krishna wants. Krishna gives you the intelligence to do. If you're sincere, then Krishna will give you the intelligence, how to act, how to serve in his service. That is the system. That is super soul. That is Chaitya Guru. Chaitya Guru means a guru in the heart. So that guru is there. That's one of the types of gurus. But for us, we can't just take Chaitya Guru as the only instructor. Because we're not purified enough yet. We can't say, well, I'm just taking instruction from Super Soul. If you're very advanced, you can do like that. 1977, Srila Prabhupada was about to leave this world. You know, it was around about July, August, like that. You know, Prabhupada was not far from leaving the world. And then the devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, please stay longer. You have more preaching to do. Please stay longer." Prabhupada said, "I will ask Krishna." Prabhupada said that. And then he put his head back. In 3 or 4 minutes, Prabhupada did not say anything. And then he came back to external consciousness. He said, "Krishna has left it up to me. I can go now or I can stay." Prabhupada directly spoke to Krishna. Prabhupada can speak to Chaitya Guru, Ishtadev. He can speak to Krishna within the heart. We can't do like that. We can take guidance. We can take inspiration. Right? Our intelligence becomes purified. But we cannot solely rely on that. Because you'll get mixed up with your mind. Because you know, your desires are not pure. If your desires are pure, then you can just listen to Super Soul and Heart. If your desires are not pure, then you have to take from the external guru. Right? There are different types of external gurus. What are the different types of external gurus? What is it? Shiksha guru. What else? Diksha guru. What else? Vatma? Pradakshika? Guru. Different types of that. Vatma, Pradakshika, Guru. That means the guru who brought you to Krishna consciousness. Someone who brought you. Who brought you to Krishna? That person is your original guru. He's the one who brought you in this lifetime to guru. Who is that? You know who it is for me? My parents? No? You know who brought me to Krishna? Prabhupada. In his books. I never met Hare Krishna in my life. I never saw Hare Krishna in my life. I knew who they were. I never met a devotee, never saw a devotee. And then I got one book. I read it. Prabhupada preaching to me, preaching to me, preaching to me. And then when I put down the book, I thought, yes, this is significant. Prabhupada was the one who brought me to Krishna. And the first book I ever read was Coming Back. Right? And then when I read the pastime of Jad Bharata, fifth canto, Shrimad Bhagavatam. You know that pastime? Jad Bharata. When I read that, that had the biggest effect on my consciousness. I thought, that's what I want to be like. Not talk to anyone. I'm going to start being like that from now on. You come and talk to me, I will not speak back. I become like Judd. Judd means stone. Actually, I would like to be like that, but not possible. We have to preach. But that had the biggest effect on me. He was not affected by heat or cold. He was not affected by externals. And when I read that, I thought, yes, that is self-realization. I want to become like that. So there's my Vatma production guru, the one who brought me to Krishna, Prabhupada, Jad Bharata. I never met Bharat Maharaj. I never met Jad Bharata. That pastime is thousands of years ago. Someone who lived thousands of years ago made me a devotee. That's why it's so important that we practice Krishna consciousness, because we don't understand the effect we are having on others. You don't know. You might be having some effect right now. Just because you are a devotee, someone else in the world is becoming affected by that. Right? It's very powerful. Right? And then there is Diksha Guru. What is Diksha Guru? One who gives you Diksha, which means initiation, means you take vows in front of that person. Who is your Diksha Guru? Who is that person? Right? That person is your primary Shiksha Guru. Right? The person, we have many Shiksha Gurus, one Diksha, but many Shiksha Gurus. Right? But the one who is the main Shiksha Guru, he becomes the Diksha Guru. That is the system. And the person who gives you the most inspiration to become Krishna conscious, the person who gets you out of bed in the morning, you wake up, right, and you think, oh, my Diksha Guru. Meditate on him. First thing we do as devotees, we offer pranam. to when you wake up in the morning, to Diksha Guru. And he gets you up in the morning. Hey, up. Time. Mangalati. Start chanting. Go. Like that. That's the system. So the person that gives you the most inspiration, that is Diksha Guru. Then you take vows in front of him, that person. And then they inspire you in your Krishna consciousness. Shiksha Guru, because Prabhupada explains, right? We are a Shiksha tradition, which means it's the instructions which are important. If you get instruction from Guru, and this is an important point. Sometimes we say, oh, that person's my Shiksha Guru, that person's my Shiksha Guru, this person's my Shiksha Guru, you know, that's my Shiksha Guru, everyone is my, you know, you can say like, that's okay. But then, if you say Guru, that means you must follow. Sometimes devotees come, they say, oh, you are my Shiksha Guru. And then you give them instruction. And then you see in their mind, you can see, you know, they're like thinking, like, I don't want to follow this. So don't say Shiksha Guru. Shiksha Guru means someone you're actually going to follow. You know, if I think I have my Diksha Guru, Tamal Krishna Goswami, and then if I think of my Shiksha Gurus, I can probably think of 4 or 5 people like that. I mean, actual Shiksha Guru means whatever they tell me, then I am doing that. So many people give instruction. So many people give guidance. So many people give inspiration. But it means, Guru means someone you actually follow. That's a different thing. You cannot question. So there are many Shiksha Gurus. This is the system. So here it is speaking. It says that these personalities, they are walking on the earth, right? And they represent Krishna, right? That is the system. Every devotee represents Krishna. All of us, everyone. Everyone is a guru, right? Hands up if you are a guru. Okay, no one puts their hands up. Right? What does that mean? That means you don't understand what you are. Right? Who is in charge of this temple? Who? Radha Vallabha, yeah, like that. Aniruddha Prabhu, right? And then you go higher, then you go GBCs, Devamrita Swami, Ramana Swami, you go higher, Prabhupada, you go higher, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is in charge. Melbourne, Mahaprabhu, Mandir. Prabhupada said those words. Melbourne, Mahaprabhu, Mandir. On the gate it says, Sri Radha Vallabha Temple, right? But actually Prabhupada, and there was a debate when we put that plaque there, because Prabhupada said, Melbourne, Mahaprabhu, Mandir. Prabhupada said, because Prabhupada right there installed Gaur Nittai, right there. Right? So Lord Chaitanya is in charge. Now what does he say? Because he is in charge. Is everyone satisfied? He is in charge. Any arguments? I just want to know. You accept it or not? You accept it. Everyone says they accept. Okay. So everyone said you're not a guru. No one put their hand up. But the person in charge says, Yare deke tare kaha, Krishna upadesh, Amaya agaya, Guru hana, Tara edesh. On my order, you are guru. Go and preach. Right? So you say, I'm not a guru. Then you, after class, you go and bow before Lord Chaitanya and said, sorry, I'm not a guru. He said, no, I'm sorry. You are a guru. Go and preach. Everyone is guru. Right? Okay, we're not Diksha Guru. Yeah, we may not be, you know, technically what we associate in our minds with what a guru is, but we are a guru. Guru means it is your responsibility to make everyone in this land Krishna conscious. Give them Krishna Upadesh, the instructions of Krishna. That is your responsibility. Hands up if you don't have that responsibility. Hands up if you do have that responsibility. Okay, so you all just got initiated. You're all gurus. You can like it or not, but that's what you are. It's your responsibility. Srila Prabhupada said, we could take over the world in 18 days if everyone fully surrendered. Prabhupada said that. We could take over the whole earth. The Hare Krishna movement could rule the earth in 18 days if we all fully surrendered. So what's happening? We're not fully surrendering. But it is your responsibility, right? If we spread Krishna consciousness, it will happen. People will take to it. People like it. It is the answer. But we have to become. So that is the responsibility. So it says here that the devotee is Krishna's representative, the representative of Narayan. Whenever the devotee goes, he represents God. Prabhupada came to the airport. He would come to many airports around the world. I think it was Melbourne, but it was one of the airports. And Prabhupada arrived, and the reporters came, and they interviewed Prabhupada. And the devotees were very enthusiastic in Prabhupada's time. So Prabhupada came, he sat in the, the airport lounge, in the airport, and all the devotees offer their obeisances. 50, 100, 80 devotees, something, offer obeisances. And then, all the people are watching, all these people going on the floor. You don't normally see that in the airport. You go to the airport, you don't normally see people bowing on the ground like that. So, it made us look a particular way. So people were watching, what are they doing? And then the reporter said to Prabhupada, why are they doing like this? Why do they all put their head to the ground? Why do they do like that? And Prabhupada said, they are offering respect to the representative of God. Prabhupada said, I am the tax collector. I travel around the world, and I take the obeisances and I give them to Krishna, to God. That is the guru's position. So on Lord Chaitanya's instruction, all of us have to take that responsibility. Right? We have to go and we have to take people's enthusiasm and give that to Krishna. And even sometimes you'll be given respect. Sometimes you, but you have to learn as a devotee to deal with that. You pass that on to your guru. You pass that on to Krishna. Even Prabhupada said, one devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada. Said that, Prabhupada, when we go, we do a program afterwards, everyone wants to touch our feet. Not them. What do we do? It was very difficult to stop them. No. Prabhupada said, just meditate on the previous acharyas. He said, if you cannot, stop it, if they insist, then they do, then you meditate, then you just and offer it like that. The respect goes backwards. Even Prabhupada was doing the pandal programs in India, big pandal programs. Thousands of people would come. And when Prabhupada would leave, everyone would try to touch Prabhupada's feet. Right? But then Prabhupada, he actually said to the devotees, do not let them do it because I become sick because their karma is transferred. He put the touch of the feet. Thousands of people, that's all they're thinking. They're just thinking, I'll let it give our sins to the saintly person. That's their karma kanda mentality. So they will go touch Prabhupada. Do not let them touch because I become sick. All the karma goes through my body. Karma is passed through touch. Whenever we touch, even you touch someone, your karma is being exchanged. You have to make sure you're pure. Just like when we are cooking, the consciousness goes in. If you eat food which is cooked by non-devotees, what does Prabhupada say in Chaitanya Charitamrita? What happens to your mind? Prabhupada says, one purport, he says, if you eat the food cooked by non-devotees, Prabhupada says, your mind becomes wicked. And you start having material thoughts. Just like today is Ekadashi. So, Prabhupada says, if you eat the grains on this day, the mind becomes wicked. And I've seen, over the years, I've seen devotees who are not strict on this point of following Ekadashi, and I see their minds have problems. They argue with devotees, criticize devotees, all these things. Like that. We should be strict on these things. Prabhupada himself was strict. Prabhupada would follow. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was insistent that his mother, Sachi Mata, follow Ekadashi. And that's God himself. He's saying, we must follow. If you don't follow, then your consciousness will become disturbed. Material desires will grow. It's very important that we follow strictly Ekadashi. And then somehow we may break Ekadashi, by some you know, extraordinary situation, you know, we may break. So then once a year, right, it is said in the Shastra, if you follow the Nirjal Ekadashi, you know, it's the big Ekadashi, it comes in June next month. You follow that Ekadashi, you know, do Nirjal, and then all of the benefits of all the other Ekadashis you get, and all the reactions if you accidentally broke, you know, during the others, then that is all taken away. But we should follow those things. Follow Ekadashi, all these things. It should be strict. So, it is being said here that the devotee is representing Krishna. Every devotee is representing Krishna. So we have to be conscientious, right, of how we act and behave, because people are watching us all the time. Now, Prabhupada mentions in the purport there are three types of devotees. What are the three levels? Kanishta, right? Then Madhyama. Then Uttama. Now, there are three ways to define who is on each level. Right? We can work it out. One is by chanting. Right? One definition is given. How do we know how advanced someone is? By their chanting and the effect of the holy name that they have by chanting and by others being in their association and chanting. Right? A Kanishta Adhikari does not have a great amount of faith in the holy name. He has some faith because he's a devotee. Adhikar. We say Adhikari, Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama, Adhikari. Adhikar means qualification. So he's a devotee. But by definition, Kanishta means a neophyte devotee or a materialistic devotee. Someone who's still very absorbed in the bodily concept of life. It means they're not an advanced devotee. They're a devotee, but not advanced. And their chanting is not so strong. They chant the holy name, but they don't have like deep faith in the holy name. The Madhyama Adhikari has much deeper faith in the holy name. And there are three types of chanting. Right? Nama Parada, Nama Bas, and Shuddha Nam. So the Madhyama Adhikari is very conscientiously cultivating Shuddha Nam, which means pure chanting. Which means he is chanting on the platform of Nam Abbas. Nam Abbas leads to Shuddha Nam, pure chanting. Nam Aparad means if you're committing offenses, you won't get Shuddha Nam. It does not happen. That is not the process. That's why it says, Bahu Jamma Kadiyadi Shravanakit. Bahu Jamma means just keep chanting birth after birth, no problem. But you won't get Krishna Prem. You won't develop, it won't become Shuddha Nam. It won't become pure devotional service. So you can chant and chant, and it is good, but you have to chant on the platform of Nam Abbas. So Nam Abbas means, Abbas literally means like shadow or reflection, right? It means the holy name is there, but not fully manifest. Right? So you're chanting, but you're not getting like the full benefit of the chanting, but you are conscientiously trying not to commit offenses in chanting. That's Nam Abbas, right? You're always careful. I don't want to commit offenses. Sometimes you do commit offenses, right? That is permissible. But you're always conscious. No, I do not want to commit the offenses. Right? The 10 offenses are interesting. We say every morning. Where we say, Bahu Jamega, everyone's half asleep. Bahu Jamega, number one. To blaspheme the number two. No. Krishna Prem, everyone says, wakes up and then no. Right? But they're actually very interesting. Right? Eight of those offenses are overcome by knowledge. Right? If you read Harinam Chintamani and study the 10 offenses, eight of them we commit because we lack proper knowledge. Like to think that the holy name, the names of the demigods and Krishna are equal, that means you just don't have a proper understanding, that's all. So, you know, when a devotee explains it to you and you read the Bhagavatam and you understand, then you understand it, then you stop committing that offense. Or to think it's imagination, that just means you lack realization and you lack, so just by cultivating knowledge in these things. But two of the offenses which means the first and the third, they are a little bit different, and they are interrelated also. Right? The first one is to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their life for propagating the holy name of the Lord. Sometimes devotees ask Prabhupada, what does that mean? Which devotees? Prabhupada said, any devotee. Any devotee. You blaspheme any devotee, it will have ramifications on your spiritual life. Right? You blaspheme an advanced devotee, it will have serious ramifications on your spiritual life. So it is, you know, graded according to the purity of the devotee. But still, Prabhupada said, any devotee. You blaspheme that devotee, then you will get the reaction that will come. So why do we blaspheme devotees? Right? One reason why we blaspheme devotees is we're committing the third offense. What is the third offense? To disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Right? These two offenses are deeply connected. If you're not following the instructions of Guru, means you're not chanting your rounds, or you're not chanting your rounds properly. Right? This is a serious matter. Right? Or you're not following the regulative principles. Or you're not following, there's so many instructions that the Guru gives, Prabhupada gives in his books. Maybe you're not following the instructions. Maybe you break a kodashi sometimes. Or so many different things that you might do. Maybe you don't cooperate with the other devotees. So many things. Disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Prabhupada's instruction was we have to cooperate with all the devotees. Prabhupada said that. He said, the proof of how much you love me is how much you cooperate once I am gone. That was his instruction. So that's something for all of us. Right? So many things we might be doing. So if we're not following the instructions of the spiritual master, then what takes place? We lose our taste, right, for devotional service. And when you begin to lose your taste, what do you do? What is one of the first symptoms? You start to blaspheme the devotees who dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Right? And vice versa. If you're blaspheming the devotees, right, and you start criticizing the devotees, then what takes place? It becomes difficult to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Because you lose your taste. So both offenses are interdependent. Right? And then, the final offense, which in our list, which we do in the morning, we say it's number 11. But in Harinam Chintamani, it's one of the, because two of the offenses are merged in the Harinam Chintamani, 5 and 6. So then, to not be attentive while chanting the holy name. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that offense is the source of all of the others. You're not attentive while chanting the holy name of Krishna. That is one of the most serious offenses. Because your whole spiritual life is very much dependent on how you chant the holy name of Krishna. The quality of your chanting. If you read the first canto, Chapter 8. What is chapter 8 called? The teachings of Queen Kunti. A very important chapter. Right, we even have a book just based on that chapter, Prabhupada's instructions in that chapter. And Prabhupada says in one of the purports in that chapter, Prabhupada says that there is a quality to the chanting. Right? Chanting is not automatic. Not like you just chant 16 rounds and all of us get the same result. Prabhupada said there's a quality to the chanting. First of all, if you follow the science of chanting or the art of chanting, it means you have to be attentive while chanting. You have to be absorbed in your chanting. Sanatan Goswami gives 6 instructions on how to chant japa very nicely. And one of the instructions he gives, which is very powerful instruction. He says, while chanting, you have to contemplate the meaning of the mantra that you are chanting. Right? That means you have to be attentive. It's a whole science. Right? It's a very powerful science that we follow. And if you follow properly, then you will get purified, you will get elevated. So a Kanishta Adhikari, he does not chant very seriously. The Majjhima Adhikari, He really puts effort into the chanting. And you see, if someone's on the Majjhima platform, which all of us are, everyone in this room is on the Majjhima platform, but if you're a Majjhimadikari, there are three types of Majjhimadikaris, right? There's Kanishta Majjham, Majjham Majjham, and Uttama Majjham, right? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this also. Right? But all of us are Majjhimadikaris to some degree. But you see, if you're on that platform and you're chanting very sincerely, you'll see rapid progress through the stages of the Majjhima Adhikari. Right? But it means you have to put the work in, right? And then you will progress. Right? So we see, you can watch, you know, Majjhima Adhikari, so many devotees have got taste for chanting, they chant very nicely. You just sit in the morning and you look around while everyone's chanting, you can see who the good chanters are. You can see who's absorbed. You can see who's really focused on the holy name. You can see who has a taste for the holy name. So that is this system. That's Majjhimadikari chanting. Kanishta means not so much faith, very distracted, still committing offences, all these things. Uttama Adhikari, it says, just by his presence, others begin to chant. Then you understand who is Uttama, right? Who is a good example of that? Yeah, Prabhupada. Prabhupada would just come and everyone would erupt in chanting. Right? I had that experience with my guru. You know, and all of us had that experience with advanced devotees. You know, when I was around my guru, I just started chanting. I just grabbed my beads and just started chanting. You know, because you just feel inspired in the association of a advanced devotee to chant. That's that, and then you can see the person has uttama qualities. Right? He's either an uttama adhikari or he's a very highly placed majjhima adhikari who has uttama tendencies. Right? Inspires others to chant. Another way that we can see the difference between the three levels of devotees is their realizations. What is the realization of the personality? Right? The Majjhima Adhikari, he does not, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, he doesn't see everyone equally. Right? His realization is not to see everyone equally. He sees, okay, this person is equal to me in devotional advancement, this person is less advanced, this person is more advanced. This is God. He very clearly understands Vishnu Tattva, who is God. He doesn't have any confusion that he is God or that we are God. Right? Some people do have that confusion. Even devotees sometimes can have that confusion. Right? And then if someone's not a devotee, he gives mercy. That's his realization. That's a Majjhima Adhikari. So by realization, we can understand how advanced someone is. Kanishta Adhikari, he cannot differentiate very easily and properly. Basically, he thinks he's the most advanced, qualified person. His guru's around about the same level of advancement as he is. You know, probably maybe a little bit more because he's the guru, right? Or he thinks the guru is the only devotee and the pure devotee. You know, you see some devotees, they get so absorbed in their guru, oh, my guru, you know, cannot offer proper respect to other gurus, cannot offer respect to other devotees. Sometimes cannot even offer proper respect to other God brothers and God sisters. This is Kanishta mentality. You know, just me and my guru. I'm very advanced, I'm very special. Obviously my guru is because he's my guru. Right? And Krishna is also very special because he's my God. Right? This is Kanishta mentality. You know. Uttama, we see by realization. What is Uttama? Uttama means so highly advanced, he sees Krishna everywhere and he offers respect to every living entity, understanding their connection to Krishna. It's a very advanced level of consciousness. It's a different level. And then another way that we can understand who is more advanced and who is less advanced is by their shastric knowledge and their learning. Kanishta Adhikaris generally don't have a lot of knowledge in the scriptures and they cannot support their theories or views or their understanding. You know, they can say, like, you know, I believe Krishna is God. How do you substantiate that? You know, I'm sorry, I don't understand. I don't know the scriptural reference. Whereas a Majjhima Adhikari, he can give the scriptural reference. Or maybe he can't give the scriptural reference, but his faith is extremely strong. So we can differentiate who is advanced by their faith, by their Shraddha. One's by chanting, one's by realization, the other one is by Shraddha, by faith. Kanishta Adhikari doesn't have Such strong faith. He may leave Krishna consciousness or not leave Krishna consciousness. Majjhima Adhikari will not leave Krishna consciousness. He may not be able to quote everything perfectly. He may not know the Shastra perfectly, but he has deep, deep faith. Uttama Adhikari, his faith is complete, right? It is completely fixed in Krishna, but he can also quote so many things. Just like His Holiness Shiva Ramaswamy, that's one person who comes to my mind. Right? I mean, you read his books, his knowledge is phenomenal. You know, what he quotes and everything, I just sit there and I'm just like dumbfounded. Or Banu Swami, His Holiness, was just here last week. You know, Maharaj is like some, you know, he's tapped into the universal computer system or something. You know, you just ask Maharaj practically any question about anything and just, it just manifests. So this is Uttama Adhikari. Right, Uttama qualification. Faith is extremely deep, right? Extremely firm, and has the Shastric reference to back up whatever they are saying. So this is the way we can understand. So it says in this verse that we need to become gurus ourselves. It says in this verse that we need to take shelter of gurus. And it says that the qualification to become a guru is you have to be on the platform at least of nishtha. Then one can take up the service of guru. Nishtha means very fixed in devotional service. Has very much overcome the anattas, the materialistic desires. That Majjhima Adhikari can become your guru. Or, if you're very fortunate, you may even get an Uttama Adhikari guru. Right, but we should understand. Sometimes people will say this. These things come up in our amongst devotees. Sometimes they say you can only go back to Godhead if you get an Uttama Adhikari guru. A guru has to be a Paramahamsa Vaishnava. It has to have full realization of Krishna. That is not true. Right, that is not supported in the Shastra. It doesn't say you have to take initiation from a person like that. Even if someone is a Majjhima Adhikari, fixed up, preaching Krishna consciousness, fully giving his heart to Krishna, and has attained the level of nishtha, is fixed in devotional service. If you follow their instructions, and if they're following an Uttama Adhikari, like Prabhupada, you can go back to Godhead. Some people say you have to take initiation from an Uttama Adhikari. You saw so many people took initiation from Prabhupada, who was an Uttama Adhikari, they're not even following the process anymore. So, you know, where is the guarantee that you'll go back to Godhead? You have to follow, right? The guru has to be qualified, but you also have to follow. If you don't follow, you don't just automatically go back to Godhead. That's the system. So here it says all of us should become gurus, and we should understand the qualification of a guru. Okay, so we'll stop here. We'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yeah.
So when you go on Hari Nam, people join us to dance with us. Sometimes I hold the hands of such people that might be the men in business suits right up to really low and try not to pay attention, but I just wonder if that applies even in Nashville.
Yes, that means you are completely contaminated. So. No, what it means is that, yeah, karma is passed through touch. So you're touching those people, right? So, yeah, karma is passed. There's karma being taken on. It's a fact. But because you're engaging in the pure activity of chanting the holy name, right, you're evaporating and destroying the karma as you practice. But so it doesn't mean, you know, we should touch. We should touch them and bring them in and like that. And Krishna will be very pleased with that. But simultaneously, there can be some contamination which is past. Prabhupada says once a year, we should try to go to the holy dams and we should bathe in the Ganga, in the Jamuna, and we should purify ourselves and get rid of all of those sins which take place. But yeah, it does. Contamination is there. Even in the very early days of ISKCON, like 1968, in San Francisco, Hyde Ashbury, they used to cook a Sunday feast and so many people would come. You know, the hippies would come And they would eat samosas and so many things. So at the end, when they were finished, then they would put their prasadam in the bin. And not all of the prasadam was finished. Like they take one bite from the samosa and then they'd leave it in the bin. Like that. So then the devotees, they would go around after the Sunday feast when everyone left and they would pick out the samosas from the bin because they were very attached to the samosas. But when Prabhupada found out, he said, do not do that. Prabhupada said, do not do that. Because even though it is prasadam, on one level it is never contaminated. Prabhupada said, if you take their remnants, you will become contaminated. Prabhupada said, do not do it. Yeah. So when you're doing Harinam, that's okay. You know, bring them in and touch them and that's all good. That's all good. But afterwards, if the businessman tries to touch your feet, do not allow it. You know, I mean, we have to be practical. But yeah, there is something is transferred. But simultaneously, we're becoming purified. We're burning it all up just by the chanting and the like that. Any other question? What's the?
By touching something.
Yeah, you have to look at time, place, circumstance. Like Prabhupada said, if you take the remnants of the non-devotees, yeah, I mean, someone who's advanced in Krishna consciousness can even do that and not become affected. You know, so what we have to do is see if it is affecting our consciousness, right? So, like on the weekend, we had a catering job, you know, close to our farm. And many nice people from our community were there. Like that, and we're friends with it, so we're all shaking hands. And the Green Senator, Richard Di Natale, he is there. Like, so he's a friend of ours. So he comes. What's it? Yeah, I did. Yeah, now I'm a Green. So, you know, we shake hands, we put our arms around each other because, you know, we're friendly like that. So that is not, but the point is there, the karma is transferred. So something does happen. But it actually mentions, if you read the Pancharatrika Pradeep, which they're re-editing. But if you read that, it actually says that if a devotee is purified, like an advanced devotee, even with contact of non-devotee, he could even eat the remnants of a non-devotee, he doesn't become affected. Because his consciousness is so powerful, it just burns to ashes any sinful contamination. Yeah? So the more advanced you become, then, you know, so you have to see, is it affecting, like you go on Harinam, you touch them, it doesn't affect you. Yeah, I went to the catering event on the weekend, I touched them, it didn't affect me. But if I start taking their remnants, that may affect. And even Prabhupada said, like that was the example we gave, after the Pandal program, Prabhupada, this is Prabhupada, whose consciousness was the most pure, he said too many people touching his feet, he became sick. So he said, do not let them touch my feet. Prabhupada said that. So, you know, you have to see if it is having effect. If Prabhupada was feeling the effect, he said, okay, enough. So you have to practically see. Like that. So.
Here's a question for you. In the Mahabharata, Vishnudev says that he is folk. Was that he was dependent on the Kauravas and that he ate their food. Right? And so as a consequence, therefore, he was influenced such that when Draupadi was disrobed and the offences were committed to the Pandavas, who were his, you know, relatives and probably had a great deal of affection, but because he was influenced by that association, then he had to undergo he's a prima bhakta. But at the same time, there was that influence that he had been himself. Do we disregard those descriptions of the Mahabharata? Because we know he's a prima bhakta and he's literally an associate of the Lord. Yet at the same time, he says he was influenced. So how do we reconcile the apparent contradiction that he was an interested of devotee, but at the same time he was also influenced by what might be considered material association?
Yeah, so Prabhupada does comment on it, and Prabhupada says the same thing. He says it's even for someone of that standing to take the association, the remnants of the people, the consciousness can be affected. And we saw with the example of Dwivida, the gorilla, who was in. So if you go back, and several of the demons actually in the pastimes, they were actually associates of the Lord. You know, but when they came into the wrong association, they became otherwise. So, and Prabhupada does make those comments that, you know, this just shows, you know, for anyone, you know, because we all left the, well, not all of us, but many of us left the spiritual world, you know, for this reason, because, you know, we chose the wrong association, and we stay here because we choose the wrong association. So, personalities, I mean, it can happen to anyone. Even a pure devotee, it can happen to. Rupa Goswami says the only people who are exempt are those who are the Lord's own Shakti, which means Radha in the actual Nitya Lila. He says 800,000 gopis are Krishna's personal Shakti, and then everyone else is Tatashta. So all the Tatashta, we have the opportunity, we can go either way, but everyone else is. So that's the point. And Prabhupada says that, you know, for anyone, we have to be careful. That's why Prabhupada says, follow Ekadashi strictly. You know, follow it strictly. It's not a small thing. Lord Chaitanya said to Satchimata, follow it. You know, so if Lord Chaitanya is saying that to Satchimata, that means we should be following it. You know, I see sometimes devotees aren't strict. It's not good. You know, very, very, like, you know, I follow Ninja once a year because, you know, I think, oh, you know, maybe on one Ekadashi I ate something and there was some spices in there that may not have been pure. And so just to be sure, then, you know. But the rest of the year, you know, you have to be strict on these things, right? And don't take the remnants of the non-devotees. You know, we have to be strict on these things. These aren't small things. Even Prabhupada was conscientious of these things. It's in the Ekadashi Mahatmya. It is described. It's Puranic. Like it's there. There are references in the Puranas. Yeah, sometimes devotees, they kind of downplay Ekadashi, but, you know, Prabhupada didn't actually downplay it. And oh, yeah. No, not, I mean, Nirjal, yes, but not most Ekadashis. Ekadashi just means you don't eat grains and beans because that's where the sin is.
As I understand, Ekadashi means fasting from the dasani. And then not taking anything. It was a good moment. I told this story. Spending a night with Krishna Dasa. And he said, because he means fasting all the way from the Dasani, staying up all night on the Ekadashi, just then you break your fast the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, but Prabhupada never said to anyone in this con that's what you have to do.
No.
Yeah. That's the high level of observing a Kodashi. But then, like, even on Janmashtami, like, you know, on Janmashtami, I follow Nirjal, you know, I go from, you know, morning till midnight. And, you know, but then Prabhupada says, you know, if you can't do that, take water. And then he says, if you're feeling faint, take fruit. And he said, you know, then that's not take milk. He said that. You know, but you can't eat grains and you can't, you know, just, you know, have, oh, you know, I can't do it and just start eating whatever you want. You know, at least follow something. But Prabhupada was practical. So Kodashi means that. It means we have to follow. I mean, if you can do, you know, Nirjal every time, and if, you know, there's actually devotees I know in our community here who do Nirjal every time. That's glorious. Right? But, you know, I can't do that. I don't do that, so. It says in the Shastra, not more than 3 drops. Yeah. But what I do on that Nirjal, the one we do once a year, I don't take. Yeah, on that day I don't take anything because, you know, I just want to follow austerely. Yeah. Yeah, put it on your head if you can. Yeah. The point is, Prabhupada said to Umapati Prabhu, or Swami, you know, Prabhupada said in, you know, 66, 67, very early in the movement, he said, Krishna consciousness means to follow in the medium. He said, not too austere and not too much sense gratification. Prabhupada said, that is Krishna consciousness. So we're not into austerity. We're not into just, you know, following strictly everything. And we're also not into, you know, being very loose, just in the middle. And if you follow that path, you make advancement very quickly. You know, and you see devotees are making so much advancement, becoming so purified. They're not fanatics, they're not austere, you know, but they're just following Krishna consciousness nicely, and you make so much advancement. Sounds good.
And he said, I fill my belly up 3 times a day. And then he took some pushara, but actually he just took a really small amount. And then he gave a portion of it to the Maharaj. You know, he was just actually joking, but he says he fills himself up. Or that he's satisfied just by taking a small quantity of enough to, you know, just keep him going. So he can chant Hare Krishna. Because that's what he did, he was just chanting Hare Krishna most of the time.
Yeah, Prabhupada's emphasis on a Kodashi and the emphasis in the Shastra is that you increase your hearing and chanting. That's the emphasis. It's not the fasting, it's not the emphasis. The fasting is secondary. Why do we fast? So we've got more time to hear and chant. Why don't we eat on Janmashtami? Then we can do service all day. It's ecstatic. You know, at the end of Janmashtami, I think, oh, I wish I could do this every day. No, not eat, because it'd be ecstatic. I could just serve and serve and serve. But, you know, the body won't be able to do that. So if you have to eat, then you just take something. And then the main thing is chant, chant, chant.
Atrocities that the Kauravas had caused, he actually was condemning them, but because he was a part of their government, he had to just be quiet and tolerate.
No, but then Prabhupada pointed out that was the defect. He should have spoken up. He was the grandfather, and when she was being disrobed, he should have said enough. You know, and he could have, physically, he could have stepped in because he was the most powerful warrior by far. You know, no one else could defeat him in the battlefield. So he could have stopped that whole pastime, but he didn't. And Prabhupada comments it's because he was eating what Duryodhana was serving.